Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam. And tonight on Sci-Fi and Squeam, I have a very special guest in the studio with me. Now, this person, this man, is part of the sequel to one of the most controversial films in genre, in horror genre anyway, from last year of 2010. Now, this year, it's number two. It's called The Human Centipede 2, the full sequence. For those who don't know, we don't know where you've been hiding, because this film is certainly building momentum to become even more controversial. We'll see. Aha. I hear a laugh and you're wondering, what on earth is that noise? That is my guest here, Lawrence R. Harvey, from The Human Centipede 2, the full sequence. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It is. It's not too warm in here, is it?
Yeah, it is, but it's fine.
Okay, we won't pass out, promise.
No, we'll just take our clothes off and run around.
We will. Right, so welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam. Is this your first time in Australia?
Yes, I've never been to Australia before. And Tom Six hates flying, so he said, yeah, I want to do the press and publicity over here.
Okay.
And the guys at Monster Pictures were well up that.
They're
came
very
over.
Keen. Very yep. keen. Good. All right, so first time here, first time down under, and you're here to promote Human Centipede number two. So it's coming to Australia for a special Q&A screening with yourself, chatting afterwards. Where is it off to after that? Do you know?
I don't know.
That's all right.
I haven't got a schedule in front of me, but I know we're in Brisbane and Sydney and going to Perth as well. So I know it's on the Monster Pictures newsletter. It's got a big list of things. So I know before the screening on Thursday, we're somewhere else on Wednesday. We've got another midnight screening in another city.
Oh.
And I'm trying to remember what it is, but I'm a bit jet lagged. So I just got in this morning. So
from very wintry
yes,
Britain.
Yeah. Yes, it's all cold drizzle, miserableness
shock.
Over there.
This is a shock. For you, I'm sure.
It's like summer. So we didn't get a summer in Britain this year. So you've nicked it. It's here.
Now, obviously, there's been some controversy about Human Centipede number 2 in the UK, for example. Initially, I believe it was banned, and then they cut it up, took bits out. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, the BBFC would say they didn't ban it. What they did was they rejected it because it was submitted uncut originally. Eureka submitted it uncut, thinking that the BBFC would then give them a list of cuts to take out, because there are a couple of moments where Martin does inflict sexual violence upon himself because he's kind of stunted his emotional and social development, and there's these feelings and his own personal history mean that he's kind of conflicted about his feelings of sexuality in his own body. And there's also a scene where he rapes the centipede as a whole, but also that scene's kind of odd because it also seems like he's trying to join in with the centipede as well. So it's not just a straight kind of reading. But the BBFC said that the whole film was permeated with a feeling of sexual violence, which I completely disagree with. I think it's the violence of somebody that's been picked upon and is powerless, and the way that they focus on somebody powerful in order to get some justification for their own kind of feelings and act it out in a bad way.
I was about to say, acting out. It sounds like someone who's taking the acting out to the next extreme.
Yes, yeah, well, I mean, it is that kind of tabloid. Yes. It is a satire on that tabloid notion of somebody that watches a horror film and becomes obsessed
and
then
does
acts it out.
Yes, exactly.
But it's a satire, that, you know, like the Mr. Creosote scene in Monty Python's Meaning of Life.
Yes.
It's like the horror film equivalent of that. It just goes so far and so over the top. By the end, it's this kind of grand guignol. What? Did they just do that? You know.
And you can't believe it.
Yeah.
That's happened. So tell us a bit, probably jumped a bit ahead here, but tell us a bit about the character you play, Martin. Now, Martin is being described Martin Lomax, I believe his name is, as an asthmatic, overweight, mentally ill, middle-aged, short British man. That's what I read online.
No, that was the description of me. Then Martin.
Oh,
I can play. No.
I thought it was just hay fever. from being in Melbourne. Okay, so you're a victim. Well, the characters.
Yeah.
You're a victim of the tabloids now. But the character's a victim of sexual abusers living with his verbally abusive mother. You're a security guard during the day in an underground car park. And you seem to have a. This character has a fetish fascination for the first Human Centipede movie, which you watch obsessively.
Yeah.
Would that describe Martin?
Kind of in the basics. I think that the fixation on Dr. Heiter is also a kind of search for a father figure. In the story, his own father, Martin's own father, sexually abused him whilst he was growing up, and the father figure that the mother's trying to impose or bring into the family, the figure of the doctor, is also somewhat dubiously, has kind of dubious motives for being involved with family, and so Martin fixates, because he's powerless, he fixates on this powerful figure of Dr. Heiter, who he misguidedly kind of wants to emulate. I mean, I think Martin is a sympathetic character because he is, you know, a victim and an underdog. When we did the cast and crew screening, a friend of mine came along, who's an artist, and she said, she was sat there, by the end she said she just wanted to run into the film and give Martin a big hug and tell him not to do the bad thing, because you just see Martin doing, his first mistake is trying to emulate Dr. Heiter, and each kind of bad decision gradually kind of ups the kind of ridiculousness and the kind of horror of the situation, and it is just a series of bad decisions. But Martin is a problem solver, you know. Some of the reviewers have said that he's mentally disabled, but I come from a kind of disability art kind of background myself, and I was very kind of specific with Tom about not making him mentally disabled. You see thought processes, you see him problem solving, but he is kind of socially and emotionally retarded because of the background of abuse that he comes from, and I think it works, it reads that way. And I think he isn't aware of how to deal with his own emotions or own feelings,
relationships, obviously.
Yeah.
Because it reminds me a little bit of a similar film, Lucky McKee's May. Perhaps not as extravagantly extreme, but May is a character who also has come from an abusive background. Mother was very oppressive, and I think the father wasn't even there, and collects dolls, and so she can't make relationships, so she makes someone out of parts of things that she likes on each person. So she meets someone, manages to lure them home because she likes their ankles, and proceeds to dismember people as she goes to make a quilt of a human boyfriend.
Is something about both characters, May and Martin, that is, it's kind of, they're stuck in this kind of pre or early adolescent kind of understanding or misunderstanding of sexuality, where I always think of Orlando and Sally Potter's version of it, where there's a scene where Orlando is speaking to this woman that he loves, and is insisting that she comes on the voyage with him, and she says, why? And he says, because I love you, you're mine. And there is that aspect to Martin and the Centipede, particularly you see it with the way he relates to Ashlyn, who is actress that returns from the first film, because there is a kind of gentleness about the way that he treats, a limited amount of gentleness.
Which is different from the first one, because there wasn't really any tenderness or gentleness, or I didn't ever feel that Dr. Heiter was a victim.
No.
Not at all.
This film is very much the kind of reverse side of the coin, you know. Heiter was powerful, Martin isn't. Heiter was kind of hated human beings, was kind of antiseptic. Martin's kind of down there in the nitty gritty. There's kind of sexual element. It's not really kind of worked out properly in Martin's head, so it's kind of becomes messy, and Dr. Heiter is a doctor who's very skilled, Martin isn't. Which then gets very, very messy.
He sounds like a MacGyver.
Or B.A. Baracus making a
Oh dear, I'm worried now. You should be, if you're listening to this interview. Okay, so there's obviously a great difference here. What on earth, and this is what people are going to ask you, especially since it's about to be released here in Australia. We're not sure for what extended period of time, because it hasn't been fully classified yet.
Well, it has been classified, but there's calls for a reassessment of the classification.
That's right. Gosh, I'm sort of losing myself here. I'm getting off the beaten track. What was I going to ask? Because I want to ask you, why? Why would you do a role like this?
Because Tom's an idiosyncratic director with interesting ideas, I think. I've always been interested interested in censorship from a kind of academic point of view. I grew up during the time of the Video Nasties campaign in the UK. Blame society's problems on something that's got nothing to do with it. You know, and I think maybe that's what some people are trying to do with films.
Still haven't quite answered why you would put yourself, do you think you're putting yourself at risk, your career at risk, by doing this sort of role?
No, I'm a great fan of a film called Deranged, which stars an actor called Robert Blossoms, who worked in experimental theatre doing shows that kind of integrated kind of live action and cinema. And he's kind of known in kind of experimental theatre circles, but also he plays Ed Gein in this film Deranged, and he's just fantastic in it. And I think that's the one film he's kind of known for. Up until now I was kind of known for doing a character on British children's TV called The Little Green Man.
You'd be my friend.
Does Martin say that in the film?
No. You should, though.
BBC wouldn't be happy about that.
No. But, I kind of thought, I'm going to go to my grave with Lawrence R. Harvey was the Little Green Man. But now, at least this has kind of superseded it. But also, I've always been interested in kind of extreme cinema and cinema that pushes the boundaries. Transgress, like the cinema transgression stuff from, you know, Nick Zedd and Richard Kern and Beth B, as well as stuff like George Cukor's Thundercrack and so on. And this, I think this fits more with those kind of films and Eraserhead and so on, rather than with the kind of typical, what people dismiss as torture porn, like Hostel and the Saw films. You know, this is more like a kind of old-fashioned midnight movie than those films. And I think there is a kind of serious intent that some critics kind of just see the gore and then dismiss any kind of attempt at deeper meaning or satire. But I think there is those other readings in it. You know, I think it is an intelligent film made by intelligent people, but it is also a very gory and very funny film, hopefully.
Very satirical, Desardian perhaps, but going to another level. And just from what I've read, it seems to remind me of, I don't know how much you think of this, but it reminds me a little bit of I Stand Alone by Gaspar Noé. Just some of the characterisation is kind of similar, perhaps obviously with more talking involved from the main character played by Philippe Nahon, but still has that idea of an isolated individual who's getting older, who doesn't really, never seems to stand up for themselves and never really says what they really want or do what they really want to do.
And somehow expresses that kind of frustration and anger in an inappropriate way as well.
It's food for thought.
Much, much worse than number one.
All right, which brings me to, was there any part of the film where you actually failed when you were told what you had to act out, what you had to do and perform? Was there any time that you said to Tom Six, I don't know if I want to do this, or why are we doing this? Why do I have to do that?
No.
Did you just trust him implicitly?
In the initial casting, he took me through the whole story, scene by scene, and how it was going to be done, how the camera angles and so on.
No surprises then?
So there was no surprises, and that's kind of what we filmed. On set, we had ideas about how to maybe do a certain action, or whether we could use a certain makeup effect or something in certain scenes, but other than that, it was pretty much as Tom envisaged right from the start. You know, no surprise. Yeah, I mean, even with when we were doing the casting, I mean, he took me through scenes. He asked me to show Martin when he's getting picked on at work, and then he wanted me to do the scene where his mother rips up the scrapbook that he has, because he's obsessed with the first film, so he's got a scrapbook of the first one. And I could really relate to that. At the moment, I live with my mum and dad, and when you're back at home, you kind of just get treated as this kind of little child. And I think if my mum threw away any of my Japanese pinky violence films or my Naomi Tani collection, I would just I consider it justifiable homicide.
You heard it first here on Sci-Fi Scream. I'm sure.
Oh, so even in the casting, he was getting me to rape a chair. So
I heard about that. Interesting. Well, at least it wasn't a stool. That could be quite diabolical. Now, Lawrence, what next? Like, you're here in Australia. Where are you going with the Human Centipede 2 elsewhere around the globe?
Well, I think we're going to Japan and maybe kind of Hong Kong. But I don't know. But certainly Japan. Yeah, I don't know. It's still kind of opening up in places. It's still got a show in, I think it's been kind of certificated in France and Germany, I think. So yeah, we're
so
just
it's
waiting.
Going around.
To,
it takes a while, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it opens up in the English-speaking world first, and then because of subtitling and so on. So, yeah, so Japan should be kind of the end of February, beginning of March kind of thing, and then other places probably sooner than that. So, I mean, I know it's opening in Iceland at the same time as it's opening here. So
they need something to lift their spirits, I figure. The dears, they're doing well, though, considering.
Yes, yeah.
The recession and everything. Beautiful. So you'll be going with the film to these other places, hopefully?
Yes, yeah, and then I've got another film that I'm filming in America next year.
So that's, any idea, but can you tell us?
I can't,
if you can't,
I'm
fine.
I'm sworn to secrecy, except that it is an American satire, but it should appeal to genre fans.
Good.
But I can't say more than that. I can't say how, but...
I think we can use our imagination. I'm sure some of our listeners can. Right, look, it's been great talking to you.
That's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's one of the funnest interviews, considering the subject matter.
Yeah.
It's
not a film for everyone, but okay. I think it is a film to go in a group of three or four people, and each of you will have a different response to it, I think. So I think it's one of those films that people talk about when they come out.
So, congratulations.
Thank you.
On this role. I think it's going to be career defining for you, and you seem very positive about it.
You're not worried.
Nope.
I am hoping that I don't get flooded with lots of silent horror film.
That was the question. Typecast.
I hope I don't get typecast just with playing kind of psychotic mummies boys. But I wouldn't mind if somebody gave a copy of the DVD to Guy Madden in Canada and said, you're looking for a Peter Lorre type. There we go.
Yes.
That would be brilliant.
Well, you never know. Something's could be arranged. Look, fantastic. Thank you for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream.
It's been a pleasure.
Great guest. Go. This is Lawrence R. Harvey, and Human Centipede number 2, the full sequence, begins here in Melbourne first on the 24th, and then I believe it's a limited release around the country, but it will be shown at the Nova. There's a Q&A this Thursday.
Yeah, there's a series of meets Martin.
Meet and greets.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. And you can take people through how to, do their own centipede.
Well, I might be tempted to bring my staple gun and make my own out of the peeps there.
Cool. Thanks for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Great.
Thanks. Hello, this is Lawrence R. Harvey, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Beautiful. That's great.
Is that 94.9?
Oh, 94.9.
Okay.
I'll do it again. Yeah, okay. I'll do A1 again. It's cool.
Hello. My name's Lawrence R. Harvey, and I play Martin in the Human Centipede 2 full sequence. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Brilliant. You're stuck.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.